All right. Dean, how are you doing?
Hey, good morning.
So we're in IE world again.
Yes.
And what's going on?
Beta 2 is coming real close. Excellent. And we want to get back to talk to people. We've had a bunch of great blog posts.
I've read one.
Over the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And maybe I should start with a "you are here." Like, you know, when you look at a map and it says there's the red pin. Okay, so for Beta 1, it was the developer experience. It was the platform. It was interoperability and web standards and test cases for the W3C. And there's been more of that, right? Jason Upton posted about a few thousand more test cases for CSS 2.1. Very important stuff.
Excellent.
Last couple of weeks, we've been talking a lot about trustworthy browsing, about safety, which is how most people talk about it. And that's been about reliability and the cross-site scripting filter, and just basic security, which is great. And today we have a couple blog posts around privacy. And that's why I called you up over the weekend.
Sure.
And it was the, hey, let's actually, you know, have a conversation around privacy.
Yes.
Now, pretty soon there's going to be some more stuff beyond the developer experience and safety. Mm-hmm. There'll be some other stuff, but I don't want to talk about that today. Today's privacy day.
Cool. So let's talk about it. I mean, give me some of the high-level, you know, things about privacy. What do you mean exactly by privacy? How's that?
And by the way, who are you?
Yeah,
hi.
Sorry.
I'm Andy Ziegler. I'm a program manager on the Internet Explorer team.
And a specialist in privacy.
That's right.
Excellent.
So to me, privacy is all about knowing what information you're disclosing to people and having a level of control over that. Hmm. So if you're browsing around the web, you expect to know that you're really at, you know, a particular site, right?
Sure.
So we did the phishing filter, and it helps you with that.
Top-level domain highlighting.
Top-level domain highlighting. You can easily tell which website you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And in IE8, we're looking at a couple other scenarios. So, like, if people are looking over your shoulder while you're browsing the web, you know, what are they going to see?
It could be embarrassing, Andy.
Especially, right. I'm not even going to go there, but... so that's one thing. And then as you're browsing around the web, it's important to know what information you're sharing with other websites and to have a level of control over that as well.
Can we talk about that for a moment? Because I was reading the blog post, which is very good, by the way, and I'm a little curious what you mean by what websites can track what you actually browse. It's not as though they can inspect your history, right? I mean, that would be... How are they doing that?
Well...
Ooh, interesting.
Right, so you can take that a couple different ways, but if you're browsing around the web, right, when you go to a website, you're not just visiting with that particular website. Most web pages today, like in 2008, are made up of content from a lot of different sources. So the core of the problem is when you browse to websites that share that same content, right, there's identifiers on your PC, be it cookies, your IP address, you know, JavaScript environment variables, whatever it happens to be, that help identify you. Hmm. So if you go to site A and site B, and they both share some content from site C, when you go to site A, it's loading stuff from site C, and when you go to site B, it's loading stuff from site C, and both times you're passing information about, you know, kind of what your computer looks like. And site C says, hey, look, this guy's been to A and B. Right, and sure, that's just two websites, but you know, as you browse around the web more, you know, potentially that could be a significant part of your web browsing history.
Interesting.
Why don't we take a step back, because look, privacy can be really confusing.
Sure.
I mean, just the conversations you and I have had with people in the industry,
right?
Much less talking with consumers, there are so many different opinions about, well, that is privacy, that isn't privacy. What do you expect? What do you not expect?
Right.
Why don't we start with the over-the-shoulder case?
Sure.
Right? So IE7 had this thing, delete browsing history. Was it good enough?
It was good. It was the first time we actually rolled up all that functionality together and gave you one big button that would wipe everything out.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems with that is that a lot of that information on your computer is really useful. So when you go to your banking website, or whatever website, they tend to store preferences in cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you want to keep those, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when you hit delete browsing history, like, everything's gone. It's like a fresh web browser. And it turns out when you go to your banking website, they often ask you, like, extra challenge questions.
Oh, look, the password just to get into a commerce site.
Right.
Right, like, I delete browsing history, and then I go back to Amazon.
Right.
Like, what was my password again?
Yeah, I never remember.
Yeah.
So in IE8, we've added a feature that lets you keep preferences and temporary files from sites that are in your favorites list.
Mm, excellent.
So if you don't want to lose your Amazon password or your, you know, banking preferences and such, as long as they're in your favorites list and you click that checkbox that says preserve favorite sites data, you hit delete, it deletes everything but that.
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay, very so cool. Score one for convenience.
Right.
Excellent.
Okay, so that's good for the over-the-shoulder case. What else happens in the over-the-shoulder case?
Well, say you're, you know, borrowing someone's laptop or you're at a kiosk. You know, it doesn't really even matter what scenario it is. It's like, do you have control over what stuff is in your web browser, and can you do that in a convenient way?
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to do it after the fact and delete your history, you know, delete browsing history is a great thing. But what if you know ahead of time, like, I'm going to go anniversary gift shopping?
Absolutely.
Right?
You do that a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, at least 12 times a year. There you go. Monthly anniversaries. But anyway, so if you know beforehand that you want to not have that browsing history recorded in that data, we have a new feature called InPrivate Browsing that essentially lets you go off the record with your web browsing. And what that means is we don't store temporary internet files, cookies, all the little things that the browser does to, you know, store history and help you get back, we just turn that off.
So let me ask you, because one of the reasons that you guys, I believe, originally implemented that to begin with, is that you could make for a more performant experience. For example, I don't have to download the same images again. I don't have to download the same JS files again, right? They're in temporary internet files and I go to the same website. So with this, there's going to be a cost associated with being...
Yeah, that's a great point. There are a lot of interesting, you know, trade-offs that a person makes, right? There's this whole, well, you know, when I when I'm doing plain old browsing, right, IE can be pretty smart about suggesting where you've been. Like when you type into the address bar, right, it says, oh, I type, you know, AMA and I'll get Amazon or whatever. And when I do clear browsing, when I delete browsing history, when I clear my tracks, when I go in private, you know, it's not going to be as good an experience getting back to the sites you've already been to.
True.
Right? And you're right, the very first time you hit a site, you'll have to download, you know, the Amazon logo again, right? And it's a couple of milliseconds here and there, but, you know, they add up.
True.
The scenario that Andy's talking about, I think, is pretty interesting in terms of, you know, I want to go and do some browsing, and when people come and look over my shoulder, I don't want them to know where I've been. And there are a lot of interesting cases, like, you know, we're in a meeting and he says, hey, can I borrow your machine to check something?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he might go in private because he doesn't want to leave those tracks on my machine. And clear browsing history is good, but it's kind of a blunt instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's going to blow a lot of things away. IE8, it's better. It's going to blow things away except for what's in my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's like, well, how do we just, you know, just from here to here, I just want to not have that part in my history.
Excellent. And to be clear, this doesn't solve the problem that you were talking about earlier in terms of shared data on the internet amongst websites. I mean, it's not like I'm really in private. I'm in private over the shoulder. That's that's what you mean. I'm just trying to be clear.
Yeah, that's great. So that's in private browsing.
Exactly.
But this is a great thing to say. If we had just done in private browsing, right, that would have been okay, but you felt pretty strongly about this whole who can see me on the internet and what's going on. So,
All right. So,
well, some of the other, I mean, do you have privacy on the internet? Is definitely one of those global warming type questions.
Exactly.
You know, if you looked at some of the other products that are out there, if you just said, hey, look, I want to be really private on the internet, you know, where do I go? What do I download? How do I make that happen? And, you know, it ranges all the way from, you know, plugins for your browser, all the way up to like anonymization solutions. And
can you really be anonymous on the internet?
It doesn't seem like it. From everything that I've read, it's pretty difficult to be completely anonymous on the internet. But
I mean, like you know, we're here on the Microsoft campus. I mean, there's some corporate IT guys who know everywhere we go on the internet through this network.
Yep.
You have an internet connection at home?
Sure do.
Through some interesting provider. They're in position to see where you go from your home machine if they really wanted to.
Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And that's happened. But, you know, I think if you want to get, I mean, if you want to make anonymization a goal, that's one thing. But I think, you know, before you go there, it's like, you know, when you go off and browse the web, what information are you sharing? You know, how many people are you talking to? Like,
right.
Do you understand, like, you know, how that works? And trying to answer those questions is really important.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to your site ABC thing. I mean,
right.
In a very basic way, you know, we're at a machine and we browse over to whiteboard, right? And then we browse over to guest chair.
Right.
And we browse over to filing cabinet.
Right.
We're being very illustrative here. And, you know, there's this challenge because, you know, over here there's, you know, there is coffee cup.
Mm-hmm.
And if whiteboard includes content from coffee cup, we go to whiteboard. Are we visiting coffee cup also?
I don't know.
Like, well, you know, whiteboard includes, you know, some, you know, 1x1 pixel GIF.
Right, right.
Off of coffeecup.com.
Right, absolutely.
Are we visiting coffee cup when we go to whiteboard?
Looks like it.
That's interesting. Okay, when
right.
If you know that 1x1 image that I'll never notice on a page, right? And the address bar just says whiteboard or guest chair,
right?
And what can Coffee Cup do?
Coffee Cup can know that you went to whiteboard, and depending on what kind of content Coffee Cup is sharing on that website, it could range all the way from like your IP address all the way up to what you're actually doing on that on whiteboard.
Wow. Hmm. Okay. So, I don't know, issue, non-issue, what do you think?
I think it's definitely an issue. I think it's important to understand as you browse around, you know, who you're, at least who you're talking to, right?
Yeah.
So, what are you saying? Are you saying that you're doing a, your solution is, and again, I really honestly don't know what your solution is, so I'm going to ask a question that other people would ask.
Sure.
So you're saying that your solution is you're going to inform me as a user that, hey, site X is, are you aware that site X is embedded in this page or is involved with the site that you're at currently right now? Is that okay with you? Or are you just going to let me know or are you going to do something about it? How's that for my question?
That's a great question.
Sure.
I'll go back to where you started with, right? You said you got to know what's going on.
Right.
You have to have some control about it.
That's right.
So, what do you think? We can have the paperclip come up and say, it looks like you're browsing the web.
Yeah.
Clippy!
Right. And it's not just what's in the address bar.
I think that's a top customer request, is to bring back Clippy.
Clippy with an IE logo on his chest.
Clippy.
Or his it's kind of a chest.
Clippy.
Yeah.
All right, so are we just going to tell people, hey, you're visiting more than once in the address bar, or are you going to let them do something about it?
Well, I think it'd be a tough situation to be in if you knew that, you know, this was happening and you didn't want it to happen and you had no control over it. Back to control.
Sure.
So, but, you know, it's definitely tough, like, where do you draw the line, you know, where do you ask users and, well, first of all, let's go back to, like, you know, what are we telling users and what...
Yeah, what are you telling?
What are we figuring out?
Okay.
And basically what we do is, as you browse around the web, we store, really, just information about what third-party content you're loading.
Mm-hmm.
So Coffee Cup is our third-party content, right?
If it's not in the address bar.
It's not in the address bar. Mm-hmm. That's basically how... That's a really good definition. So all the sites that aren't in the address bar when you load a page, we're saying, hey, look, we loaded this third-party thing.
Mm-hmm.
And as you browse around, we try to figure out what third-party stuff is shared by the sites that you visit. So if you go to Amazon and then you go to Yahoo, not to use specific examples, but...
That's fine.
You know, I don't know what third-party content is included
or
on
if
the
you
sites,
go to MSN for that matter.
Sure,
and we have third-party content too.
Exactly.
So
go to whitehouse.gov.
Yes, whitehouse.gov. We try to figure out what content is shared by those sites and has a line of sight into your browsing.
Okay.
We can't really say, like, whether or not what they're doing with your data, right? That's why they have privacy policies and things like that.
Okay.
But we can say for sure, like, if you're loading third-party content from lots of, the same third-party content from lots of first-party sites, we can say for sure that third-party content is in a position to know that you've been to those sites.
Okay. What do you mean by third-party content? I mean, do you mean all the cookie stuff that we wrote about, or do you really just mean content?
I really just mean content.
So it's anything?
Anything.
Image,
script, CSS, anything that you go download, right?
Got it.
And that's important because, when you download something, you're actually, you know, talking to a third-party server, you're sending up cookies, but you're also disclosing your IP address. Mm-hmm. And there's other things that third-party websites can do to try to fingerprint your computer. Mm-hmm. So
it's really anything. Like if I get a photograph,
yes.
Like if I get a stock chart, if I get a logo,
yep.
Anything.
Yep. Even images that you can't see.
Oh, even like those one by one pixel right. things. Okay.
I mean, this is an incredible rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Because, in essence, this really is. You know, is there any let me ask you this. Is there really any privacy on the internet? And is there ever going to be privacy on the internet unless you provide a complete anonymous solution, right? And I don't see how IE could be involved with that completely because we do travel, traverse the web through servers, right?
Oh, there's so many people involved, right?
It's amazing.
You've got your internet service provider. You've got, you know, the PC that you're running might have extra stuff on it that's trying to help you out. Like, mm-hmm. hey, I really want all of my history to be uploaded to this other server. I want it to roam. So when I go from machine to machine, right? So you've got extra software in your local machine. You've got whoever's connecting you to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of parties involved. But I think your question's pretty crucial, right? It's like, can you have privacy on the internet? And I'll go back to how you framed it. I mean, you can know where your information's going.
Right.
And you can have some choice. You can mm-hmm. you can exert a choice, mm-hmm. where you can say, "Hey, I do or I don't want this information to leave my machine." Because you know, ultimately, with all the technology and all the solutions, and you know, do you guys support you know technology X or technology Q? It's mm-hmm. the you know, do I get a choice as a user?
Yeah.
Right. Like you know, it's a personal computer, capital P personal computer.
Absolutely.
And am I in control of what's going on here?
Absolutely, and capital P paranoid for people like me. I'm paranoid when I surf the internet because I really it's a scary place.
Well, so you're nailing it here because there's also the spectrum, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, you talked about people when we started in on this feature, and we had you know the developers and the testers. We had everyone around the table. You know, you talked about the people wearing tinfoil hats, right? There are people who are really concerned about the moonbeams that might yep. you know affect how they think, and so there's some people who are really extreme.
Yeah.
In their privacy concerns. And, you know, it's valid. It's their concerns. Mm-hmm. There are people who aren't going to get the concepts. They're not technologists. My mm-hmm. brother, I love him. He's not that bright.
Oh,
right?
No. Phone will ring at some point.
My mom will call soon. He's a nuclear cardiologist. You know, he's got a day job.
Yeah.
Right? He's not going to go and concern himself around third-party, first-party privacy policy. He just wants to know what to expect.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so some of that's a trade, right? Like how much are you willing to, you know, I don't want to say sacrifice, but it's not always a straight-up trade. But, for instance, if you want to pursue some kind of real anonymization solution, real being, you know, the best that's out there, like, mm-hmm. you know, are you willing to, you know, go from broadband to dial-up?
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And things like that. Are you, you know, what we want to do is try to take steps in that direction, right? And, we want to start with giving you a more convenient way to control things, right. And you know, just really like, if the end goal is to get to privacy on the web, we're making the first few steps.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So just going back to the solution. So as the user browses around in what I'll call plain old browsing,
right?
IE builds up like an assessment of which third parties mm-hmm. can see you, right? So as you go to whiteboard. And then guest chair, right? We mark off, wow, you know, coffee cup plus
right.
one.
Right.
Coffee cup plus one.
Yep.
And then when, you know, by default, that keeps going, right? So by default, it's the same web experience, same information
yep.
footprint.
Yep.
Now, I go to, and I'm browsing in private. I go, whoosh, in private.
Yep.
What happens?
Well, we look at, you know, which coffee cups, right?
Right.
That you've seen, and by default, we'll block them because you've chosen all of the ones that have been present on enough sites that you've viewed.
Okay, so it's not like it's all third-party content.
No, absolutely not.
Okay,
we just want to block the things that have a line of sight into your browsing habits. And in order to figure that out, you have to have actually been to some of those sites.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, so out of the box, browsing is the same.
Yep.
information disclosure is the same. You choose to go in private,
yep.
Then automatically these third-party sites, the ones that you don't know you're visiting,
right,
that are high frequency,
right,
that stuff gets blocked.
That's correct.
Is that the whole feature?
It's not.
We see more. We're actually not marketing people. We're actually trained professional engineers. There's no hair product, right?
No, there's not.
It's just very early in the morning, so we're a little punchy. So yeah. It's not just this automatic high frequency stuff. What else can you do?
No, Dean, we have more. So you know, say for instance that you know it's 2 years from now, and you're familiar with some of these issues, and or you just have a friend that. Is really like into privacy and understands all the issues, and because in the end we write software and we have to write computer programs to figure some of these things out, and sometimes people are just smarter than computers.
Hopefully.
So we have a feature called In Private Subscriptions that lets you kind of augment the capability of In Private Blocking. So you can actually subscribe. It's just like a feed. You can subscribe to lists of content to block or allow while you're browsing in private. So it just, it's a way to increase. It's a way to let you kind of delegate your choices, right? So like, instead of having to like answer, yes, I want to block this, or no, I don't want to block this, or I want to do automatic, or and just block stuff automatically. You guys figure it out. You can say, I know I trust this. This person to figure this out for me.
All right, so you're my smart friend.
That's right.
And I'm sitting there going, I can have IE just say, okay, here's a threshold, block this stuff.
Right.
But I don't really know what that's doing. That's just counting. That's what computers are good at.
Right.
I know that you've gone through and you've read all the privacy
policies.
That's right. You got some criteria, and I'm just going to trust you.
Right.
And I'll subscribe to your list.
That's right.
And then IE will trust the list that you have around, okay, when I'm in private, which third-party stuff should I let through? Which third-party stuff should I block?
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
And where does this list live? I mean, you mentioned feed, so can it live?
Anywhere.
Yep. Channel 9 could do one. Channel 9 could have here's our version of in-private subscriptions.
Nice.
Yep. Right?
Very
or,
cool.
Or anyone with a blog, anyone who's got, a website, can just go and...
So now for the hard question, Dean, that I'm going to ask you... When you first did the announcement last time we were here with the ACID, which was a really excellent step for you guys as far as standards, blah, blah, blah. The first thing that everybody said, not the first thing, but a big topic at MIX was IE8 is going to break the web because now that it's standards compliant and all the code that's out there that's not standard compliant to support what wasn't standards compliant, blah, blah, blah. If I'm a user and I say, and I'm a little bit paranoid, and I say, hey, I want everything to be kind of private. I mean, of course, the average user is going to go, privacy. It's going to break things, right? Is it going to break experiences for them?
It's going to change things.
Okay.
And I think that there are a lot of good historical examples to go back to. Let's talk about pop-up blockers.
Okay.
Right? Way back when giants walked the earth, there were pop-up windows everywhere.
Indeed.
Right? And... end users weren't really happy about it. And you can go through and say, look, the introduction of the pop-up blocker broke the web experience because I went to Andy's site, which means I must want to be at Andy's site, which means I must trust Andy's site.
Yeah.
And if Andy's site wants to pop up 10 windows with all sorts of flashing things on them, well, that's the price I pay for going to Andy's site.
Mm-hmm.
And that just really doesn't make a lot of sense to anyone.
Exactly.
And so obviously we have pop-up blockers.
Mm-hmm.
So the browser, in a lot of ways, ends up not just being this, we're just presenting whatever the website says. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other things the browser has to do. I mean, you got the pop-up blocker, you've got a bunch of security and safety protections.
Excellent.
I think about the phishing filter or an IE8, the malware protection that comes in. You can think about accessibility tools. Right. If I've got some interesting, site impairments, and I can't read websites as they are produced, there are a lot of tools to help sight impaired people read sites and experience sites. I mean, IE's got a Zoom feature, right? Mm-hmm. People could argue, no, that's not the way I authored my site.
Yeah.
And okay, great, the user gets to Zoom.
Sure.
I think that this functionality is part of a long tradition. What is now a long tradition of putting users in control. And I think that your question is really interesting.
not just because it's this question of change the web, break the web, but what's involved in the handshake. Now, you and I have had a lot of conversations with people around, well, when you go to a website, you know, what does that mean? Right? Who, like, what's going on in that exchange? And, you know, I think about how you frame privacy, and, you know, it's not just in control, but it's being aware.
Right.
And, you know, when I go to, you know, Charles... Mm-hmm. When I go to channel9.com, mm-hmm. I look up in the address bar, I see Channel 9, and I think, okay, I've got a relationship with Channel 9. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of other websites involved when you visit the web. And, you know, you can, in IE Today, if you go to the view menu and choose Web Page Privacy Report, you can see this full list of all the other websites you visit. And the core issue is, as I browse around, I give those other websites information. Can I see that now? Do I have any understanding that that's going on unless I work on the IE team and I know about this dialog box?
Mm-hmm.
And is that, you know, under my control? And the whole, you know, the core of your question, I think, mm-hmm. becomes really interesting because there are websites that need that information.
Yeah.
And I totally get that they need the information. It's part of how they deliver a better experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're totally for the information exchange. We just want it to be informed.
Absolutely.
We just want it to be transparent. And that's, you know, that I think is really crucial. Like, look, I go to a website, I'm going to punch in my zip code so I can get, you know, traffic and weather and good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to know where that information's going and who else can check that out.
Absolutely.
And this part of that being in control.
Yeah. Now, of course, in that scenario, Internet Explorer is not going to guarantee that we can actually, or that you can actually provide that answer, in the sense that if you come to charlesx.com,
right,
and you type in anything,
right,
I can take that and do whatever I want with it on the back end.
Exactly.
And you'll have no idea, and the browser will be completely disconnected from that scenario. I won't be sending cookies down.
Yeah.
But I might take the data and send it to my buddy over, you know,
right,
somewhere.
Well, that's why you're talking about privacy policies. You know, ultimately, you have to go read the... There's no replacement. There's no alternative for reading the privacy policy. And, you know, in some ways, that's why, you know, you and I keep talking about third-party content.
Yeah.
Because we have no other way to judge what's going on. Like, we can't, we don't know, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we do not know, and there's no way that IE can know the business relationships and the contracts and the terms of use between the site that you're visiting and the other sites that it's getting content from. You know, the web's just not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it might be that one day, you know, a couple of years from now, we'll have figured out some amazing XML schema where you can encode all these relationships. Great. Let's get there faster.
Sure.
But today, all you can tell is, here's the site that I see in the address bar. Here are the other sites that are getting pulled in.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on with my information?
Right.
So why can't information exchange be like, for example, if I compose a web page and I have four iframes or something,
mm-hmm.
Internet Explorer for a really long time has prevented me from inspecting or communicating those other mm-hmm. iframes.
Right.
So why can't we consider privacy data to be sort of like, you know, JavaScript? Although, let's not go down the rabbit hole of JavaScript and security.
Yeah, what's the difference between everything we're doing and the same origin policy? Right. So it's really hard, like, if you have two sites that are collaborating, right, like, and you're including stuff from Coffee Cup,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, Coffee Cup knows you and you know Coffee Cup,
sure.
right? There are certain ways to bypass some of the protections that we put there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a website and you want to include, you know, content from other sites and put it in an iframe, that works great. Like, worked before, works today.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But it turns out that it's pretty easy to share information across an iframe boundary if both sites are collaborating, right?
So I'm still a little bit confused about exactly how sites collaborate. Is it a sort of structured agreement between two websites? I mean, what's going on? What's the two sites collaborating? What do you mean? What does that mean? It's not just me pulling in data from two different places as a website composer?
Well, you know, so there, Well, and this really is the rabbit hole that you're talking about,
okay.
Right? And I don't want to get into...
Let's not go down.
Well, look, here, there are all the conspiracy theories about... all my appliances are talking about me. All the websites I visit are doing this. Whereas even if you set aside all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
You know, there are some really basic examples that Andy's dug through around, you know, I go to this site, and I go to that site, and then I go to this other site over here. And if they all include... the same, you know, one-by-one transparent image,
mm-hmm.
right, from this site over here, right, then doesn't matter what else they're sharing or what agreements are in place, this site over here is in position to know that my machine went there, there, and there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they may not know, oh, here's the user ID and, you know, here's where he lives and all this other stuff,
mm-hmm.
but they can say, yep, this box went to those three sites. And that might not be something you want to share.
Absolutely.
And then, to me, that's the basic thing that the browser actually can protect against.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I think will make this conceptually hard in some ways is that we're dealing with this concept of third party. We can't say that it's about content that you know, when you look at the page, it's like, oh, it's all images. Or it's all sports scores, or it's all weather maps, or it's all stock tickers, right? It's stuff that's third party. When you look at the web page, there's no way to just eyeball something and say, oh, here's the site that came from. And so technologically, that's what IE is doing.
Sure. I mean, it's really interesting to me. I know why IP addresses are necessary,
right.
But I really don't think that in this scenario, why can't we surf the internet with, you know, you need an IP address if you want to have another computer interact with you on a sort of a peer-to-peer level. And also, so my question is simple.
Yeah.
Why the hell do I have to tell anybody my IP address if I don't want them to know it? If there's some way to mask it, if there's some way to have a trusted, like...
Yeah. Well, you're hitting like the thing that Ant, like at first we started talking about this feature, he was like, yeah, we're gonna go through, we'll create an anonymization server, it'll be a proxy, and there are a lot of technologies like this.
Mm-hmm.
Then you kind of look at how many people browse with IE, and you're like, wow, everyone on the web's gonna show up at my house asking for a cup of anonymity, right? That's really hard. Like if we all give them your phone number, right? You'd be really busy. And so the challenge around handing out the IP address is the information needs to know where to go. Right? When you ask for some information, it needs to know where to go, and that's how the IP address plays in. And the challenge there is, well...
You're right. Absolutely.
And so the thing that's interesting is we all immediately go to concepts that we understand quickly, mm-hmm. like, I know what an IP address is, or I know what a cookie is. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that when you really dig into the web technologies... There are so many ways of doing this. I mean, you forwarded me this internet relay chat that was wild. I mean, there are a bunch of super smart people from a bunch of different companies,
mm-hmm.
Who were having this live conversation on the web, typing back and forth around. I think it was an HTML5 or a what working group conversation around. Okay, well, how do we enable developers to do this cool stuff? And they ended up having this whole long digression. Around, well, when you browse the web, who knows what? And
mm-hmm.
to me, it was really eye-opening because I had not dug into that as deeply as these guys had. And, you know, it's not just about cookies, right? You mentioned JavaScript environment variables, and there are all these subtle ways to talk about it. You've got this mall example that I think is pretty good. I don't know if you want to describe it.
Sure, yeah. We kind of sat around and tried to figure out, a real world example of what, this scenario is like.
Yeah.
So, imagine you go to a shopping mall, and there's a kiosk in the center of the mall, and as you walk in, somebody says, "Hey, look, do you want to participate in this survey?" And basically, the survey works like at some of the stores in the mall. There's a representative there, and he will mark off if you've been to the store or not if you go there. And when you check in at the kiosk, they don't take your name or anything. They just say, this guy is wearing a brown shirt, and he has, long hair and, funny shoes. And they look for that guy. as it, when you walk into the store, you say, okay, there's the guy with the brown hair and the, mm-hmm. you know, the funny shirt and whatever. And at the end of the day, all the little guys in the store report that information back to the kiosk. So ultimately, the guy in the center of the mall says, okay, you know, this guy who looks kind of like this has been to stores X, Y, and Z in the mall. So, you know, sometimes, like, that's fine. Like, you go into the mall, it's like, sure, I'll participate in the survey, I don't care. But sometimes you just don't want to.
Understood. Now, I think a lot, some people might get confused between the difference between a machine ID and an IP address. Now, if you go through a proxy server like we do here at Microsoft, it's not that you're never surfing with your IP address. You're surfing
right.
with an IP address that's created by the DHCP server or
sure.
the internet proxy is a better example. So, but a machine ID is actually the ID of your machine, which you cannot get at from JavaScript. I just want to, for the people out there that are going to
yeah.
freak out.
Well, so this
right?
is why the blog posts are good. You know, I'll link off to the site. There's a link to the IRC in one of our blog posts. I can't remember which one, because there's gonna be a lot of no, you can't. Yes, you can. No, you can't. Yes, you can. And it's gonna be fun to, you know, I'm sure that there will be a lot of that on Channel 9. That's what I'll be reading tonight. You know, well, you can't get at the machine ID. Well, you don't really need to get at the machine ID, because if you get at, if you just recorded this information, this information, this information, you can mostly uniquely identify.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll just step back and say, you know, from working in security, I've had a lot of really humbling experiences. And, you know, one of them, the very short version of one of them is, we reviewed an issue, and it was Tuesday, and we said, gosh, you know what, the state of the technology today, you can't exploit this,
mm-hmm.
right? And then on Thursday at Black Hat, some paper came out, and I got this mail, and it was just like, yeah, you know, we were wrong. Turns out that you actually can't exploit that thing. And I think in some ways privacy is going to be a very moving target.
Sure.
And we've, you know, just from going back and forth here, we've touched on the ambiguities. We've touched on how different people have different definitions and different expectations. And really, what this boils down to is being control. And
sure.
having some notion of notice, some information that, hey, you know, there is this survey being taken, or there is this guy with a clipboard, and, you know, he might have a clipboard, or he might just be, you know, there. I don't know if he's writing stuff down
right.
about you. But, you know, you get a chance to be in control.
Right.
Okay.
Sure. And that's actually a great theme. That's what you want to get out today, right?
Hey,
that's the key.
It's all about being in control.
Being in control. One, there's a couple more things, though, before we go. The one thing I'd ask you
yeah.
Is there any future for the notion of, like, virtualization involved in this? So I could have sort of a virtual identity that you guys spin up when I browse, not as me, but I browse as some fictitious character
there's,
with random
there's
information.
There's so much we could do there. There's just, you know, there's this big, wide, open space. Like, I think about all the ideas that you know, the developers and testers and you came up with. And boy, there's a lot of upside here. And you know, as Andy said, it really is like this first step.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, let's go do this. You know, much like in 2001, P3P was a first step in terms of, you know, how do we protect people from cookies.
Mm-hmm.
2001, 2008, you know, a lot of things have gotten better and richer. And, you know, it's not just about cookies.
Cool.
Okay.
Excellent. It's not just about cookies. Thank you.